People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions.
This is Rodney Trudgeon, and this is People of Note on Fine Music Radio. I'm very excited to introduce you to my guest this week, our star soprano, Priti Yende, who really seems to be on something of a trajectory and who's conquering the major opera stages of the world, La Scala, The Met, an unexpected debut at The Met, the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, Wigmore Hall. The list goes on and on and on. Priti, before I even say anything, a warm welcome, and I know you're very busy, so thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I always make time to be home, and it's the most exciting for me.
And tell me why you are in South Africa in the first place, because I know you're not performing this time.
Yes, I'm on holiday, and I'm saying hello, everybody. I'm back home, and I get to come and bearing this beautiful gift of my new album. So this week, I am promoting it. It's being released, obviously, globally on the 16th of September. So I felt the need to come down and tell all my friends and family that I have made in Cape Town, in Johannesburg, everywhere in the country, that we have arrived at a point where we can look back to the journey so far. And so I'm doing CD promotions for this week, but then I'm home with my family next week before I venture on to my next season at Paris, New York, and Covent Garden.
What a story, Priti. And that's called A Journey, Priti Yende.
Yes, yes.
And it's on the Sony Classical label.
It's on a Sony Classical label, one of the most exciting labels that I got the privilege of working with. I was very happy to connect with them because before I had to choose between them and a couple of other recording labels. But there was just something about them that I felt at home, and we are all excited. And they became part of the Priti Army. I called all the people who have helped me to be who I want to be and guide me along the way. And so they are part of the Priti Army.
But the Sony label has got some very, very smart singers. You're in great company there. And I'm immediately thinking of the tenor of the moment, Jonas Kaufmann, who's also just got a CD about to release.
Yes.
So you really are in good company with Sony.
I mean, I always find myself in fantastic companies because I think the whole journey has been such an extraordinary one. It's been unique, of course. But I'm very grateful for each and every milestone that has happened so far. And in making this CD, it was not such a difficult choice to actually name it The Journey, because it's been a journey and life is a journey. You never quite arrive anywhere, but you just walk along and you make friends along the way.
Now, I know we're going to listen to some of this, but just tell me, when you say a journey, how have you laid out the various tracks?
It has been one of the most challenging things to do because there's so much that has happened so far. But we tried to lay out the highlights of the highlights from this extraordinary journey. So obviously started with the Lakmé duet, which is the piece that introduced me to opera, and highlighted the big moments from the big debut at the Metropolitan Opera House, my invitation to the Young Artist Program in La Scala with the Romeo and Juliet, and also winning the big opera competitions from Operalia and Belvedere competition, and also highlighting the debuts that were to come. I just did the debut of I Puritani in Zurich, and also going back to the Metropolitan Opera House for Il Barbiere di Siviglia and the Romeo and Juliet. So in a way, it's just a glimpse of these milestones that have happened so far. And it is a wonderful repertoire, I guess, and one that is so has everything. And I'm hoping that it will bring everybody some smiles.
Well, recently, I have to tell you, Priti, recently we had it as the CD of the week here on Fine Music Radio.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that also stimulated to people to buy it. We used it as the download of the week because you can download it apparently prior to its release.
Absolutely.
So, and Sony as a label, you're implying that the way they work, the way the management runs, is the sort of thing that you enjoy and gives you a form of artistic support and freedom.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things that highlight my journey so much, because I always felt that in order for me to express the joy that I felt, I heard the music the first time, is that I can only express that when I'm free. So I cannot be caged, I cannot be packaged into a certain market type. It has to be as natural and human as possible. And they're the label that were able to understand that. And that is why it was easy for me to know exactly the repertoire that I wanted to sing, how the cover would look, because everything has to resonate the person herself. She's only human, and she had a dream, and it has come alive. And that essence of humanity in the CD has to be seen on the cover. And when you hear the music, I hope you only hear that it's just a gift. It is not perfection. And each note, and hopefully the communication from soul to soul, can be heard through the music that is inside the CD.
It's very interesting you say those things, Pretty, because what I've read about you, and in interviews I've read about you, you are very aware of this gift that you have got. It's almost as if you've managed to steer clear of the prima donna style of attitude, but that you are, maybe it's your humble background, very aware of this gift, and also very aware of the fact that it is a gift that you've been given and that you need to share it.
Absolutely.
It's almost as though you're saying, okay, I've been given this gift, and part of this gift is a requirement to share it.
Absolutely. And a responsibility to remain human, because it is a world that you get elevated so many times, and it's a privilege, it's an honor, but it's service, you know. We are on stage serving, we are serving the music, and in the process we hope that we find joy as we do it, but as well the exchange that happens between me and you when we're in that auditorium. We can be so amazed at what happens, actually, if we had eyes to see the virtue. I give my all to 4,000 souls in one moment, in 3 hours, just from this one being. And that's powerful, and that's the power that connects humanity.
And that you are determined to bring across on that CD.
I am
as well.
More than determined than anything else, because in each and every corner of the world, from one number to the next, I made great friendships. I grew as well as an artist, and I'm hoping that we can see from one number to the next.
Well, let's begin then, your first piece of music. You said you'd like to feature this album, and I'm very, very pleased you are, because it's hot off the press, so to speak.
Yes.
So what are we going to have first, Pretty?
First up, we have the Il Barbiere di Siviglia, which has become one of my signature roles. Rossini is the big part of the program, because he's been my lucky charm from my debut in La Scala to the Met, as well as in Vienna. Yes. And so it felt right to start with him. And Rosina is one of my most performed roles at the moment. I debuted it in Oslo, and then I sang it at Opera Bastille in February, which was great success. And I'm going back to the Metropolitan Opera House with the same role.
Okay, well, here we go, from this brand new CD, A Journey with Pretty Ende, the music of Rossini.
Farò giocare, farò giocare, e cento
Now, what about that? There's a showpiece for you. Onovoce Pocofai, the famous soprano aria from The Barber of Seville by Rossini, sung by my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, Prettyenda, on her brand new CD called Prettyenda, A Journey. Well, that, as you say, Pretty, is very much a showpiece, and I think you said it was your good luck charm, or Rossini is your good luck charm.
Absolutely.
But I want to go back now a little bit and ask you where it all began. Just now, you spoke about the flower duet,
yes.
And you said you heard that when you were young, and you said, what is this? And you had no idea about what opera. Do you come from a musical family, or how did it all begin?
Well, I remember evenings at home, every after supper, we would all gather around and sing together hymns from the church. And so the seed of music was planted on me when I was still young. And my grandmother played a huge role into grooming me into being a soloist, because there were times where she would teach me songs. And she would say to me, when we get to church, you have to stand up and sing in front of everyone. Did I like it? No. I was scared and I didn't like it, but I obeyed. And that obedience paid off, because the seed of music was planted in me and I gained the confidence to stand in front of people and make people happy. And so music was always there. And then classical music came, obviously, in 2001 when I was home with my family watching this TV ad. We were just watching TV that night like any other night, and there was this ad in 10 seconds, maybe even less. I don't remember the picture, but I know the music very well, because as I'm speaking to you, I know the moment right now. And I was touched by something that somehow maybe my soul knew, but my mind had nothing to do with it. It was like the sun and the moon. And so when I went to my high school teacher the following day asking him what it was, and he told me it's called opera, I said, well, is it humanly possible? Because for me, it sounded so supernatural. I could not believe that human beings have such a gift. And when he told me, of course, that it was humanly possible, I said, well, teach me. But what was it about it? It was the power of the human voice that is able to manipulate time, that is able to surpass our physical being, and we are able to have a communication beyond the black and white sheet music, beyond the stage and everything, you know. And so I was touched by that, and I wanted to be part of it. And I'm glad that the journey started there, and I could not leave that out from the album.
Because is it on the album?
It's on the album. It's the second piece in the album, and I'm excited that I got to share this moment with a colleague of mine called Kate, and we had fun recording this together.
Because it famously is a duet, isn't it? And
absolutely.
The way Delibes wrote the intertwining voices,
oh, yes.
It's a mezzo, isn't it?
It's a mezzo, yes, and a soprano, yes.
And so, how can you remember how old you were when this extraordinary thing happened that evening?
I was 16 years old.
16?
Yes, I was 16 years old, and I always had a happy life, and I have always been a happy girl living with my family. I'm the firstborn at home, two brothers and a sister, and my mom and dad are still with us, thank God. But there was just something powerful, the love and the joy that I felt from hearing this music. I wanted to share it with everyone, and that's why I was so determined, because I needed to share this with the world.
Did you know at that stage that you had a voice? I know you said your grandmother said, we're going to go and make you sing solo. Did you know, or someone knew you had a voice?
Mm-hmm.
Someone was aware that there's something special here.
Yes, talent was always there. I mean, in the church, I was very active. I was the youth leader, and I was in charge of the church choir, so I would teach songs to the youth leaders, also in Sunday school. So I was already in the front, and I got used to being, you know, leading the choir and stuff. But singing this way was something foreign, because when my teacher then advised me to join the choir, I couldn't sing, and he said to me, you don't have the voice, and he was right, because I didn't know how to sing this way.
With a choir, you mean, as opposed to being a soloist?
As a soloist, exactly, but also the technique, the way of singing classical music and gospel are not the same. My sister, actually, she's lucky because she can have the both, but for me, when I started singing this kind of music, I was not able to do, you know, to be that, to have that flexibility.
That's interesting.
You know, yeah.
So then the journey began. You heard that, you said to your teacher at school, you want to sing like that, and that's where the journey began.
Absolutely.
Which took you to where you are now on this, as I said before, this trajectory.
Yes.
But we're going to come and find out what the next step was in just a moment. What is the next piece from your new album, Kitty?
The next piece that we thought could continued along this milestone was the Beatrice di Tenda by Bellini. This is a piece that I sang in Moscow at Placido Domingo's Operalia. And actually, this was also a tribute to my grandmother, because when I sang this competition at that time, she had just passed away. And I felt the need to put in the album for that reason. But more than that, Bellini is one of my most favorite composers of the three. There is something about the Bellini line that just resonates with me, and a future as well, as Beatrice is one of the future roles that I would be looking forward to.
So, but you can sing it just on its own, but
yes,
to get the role under your belt still takes some work, presumably.
Absolutely, and experience, and also everything is really strategic. I can sing everything I want, but I can choose wisely so that I sing longer and healthier as possible. And that is why it is not an instant thing. It is not a status thing. It is my life's gift to life. And it is moment by moment and not just a quick fix.
Okay, we're going to come back to that and how some management and labels push young artists. But let's listen to this Bellini aria first of all.
Oh,
music of Bellini with my guest Pretty Yenta. What was that aria, Pretty?
It was the aria by Beatrice di Tenda, by Bellini, his opera Beatrice di Tenda, and the singer is Beatrice.
And these arias that we're playing you in the course of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week are on Pretty Yenta's brand new CD on the Sony Classical label, which has just been released this month, September, called A Journey. Pretty, just before the music, we were talking about people pushing you.
Yes.
And you said how you're taking your time,
yeah,
which is unusual for a young person, because yeah, it must be very tempting if the
yes,
Met and La Scala and all these people are coming to you and wanting to you to do big roles.
Yes.
But I think you've mentioned that the people, or in interviews I've read with you, Virginia Davids, the
yes,
teacher that you were so fond of,
yes,
Marilla Frenny, other people, have all said, don't. So how have you managed not to want to do the big roles that perhaps you're not suited for yet,
mm-hmm,
to give your voice this life that you want to give it?
I think one of the reasons that I've learned more than the music itself is that this journey was teaching me about myself and challenging me as a person. And I've had the most pleasures of meeting all these wonderful singers, from my voice teacher, Virginia Davids, to Montserrat Caballé, Renée Fleming, Mirella Freni, and all these wonderful ladies. And every one of them warned me or advised me to really be aware that my voice has the power to dictate the pace and the heartbeat of this journey. If I'm honest and listening to it, it will be hard because it will require me to say more no than yes. How did that happen for me? Well, it was easier because the Pretty Army is a wonderful group of people who allow me to know that it's okay to say no. From my management to the record label, to my voice teachers, to my coaching. So I have been having the pleasures of collecting people or making friends with people that actually are in the same vision as I am. And the whole point is that I really would like to give this gift for as long as I can. And in order to do that, even the most tempting of offers, I have had said to say no to them. Not because I can't, not because whatever, but because I know that in the long run, it's a muscle that always needs to be protected, and it grows without being pushed or hurry.
Yes.
So I need to be careful each and every step that goes along the way. That is why for me, even choosing management or the record label, I took time. In the taking of that time, by my mentors, of course, in La Scala, they say, if you give your voice time to do what it needs to do, you won't have to say to the record label, I don't need to be pushed. The voice will say to them, this is what has to be done. And this has been great because that meant I only concentrate on the music and everything else somehow falls into plan. And it has been such a great pleasure to feel the liberty of working on this project, because I have read stories, I have listened to my colleagues not being happy by the whole process, but I have had the most fun working with the record label.
And it sounds like it. From what we've heard so far, there's mm-hmm, you sound relaxed and warm. But Pretty, one of the things I want to ask you, talking about pushing your voice,
yes,
and again, I saw this, see, having read about you quite a bit. You remember when Richard Bonning was here, Joan
yes,
Sutherland's husband, and you did
yes,
Lucia.
Yes.
And I think you suggested that Lucia was too big a role,
yeah,
and should you do it,
yes,
or you just do it once.
Yes.
And I think he implied the same thing.
Absolutely.
Take it easy,
yes,
and you'll do many Lucias. And that's an example of what you're saying, isn't it?
Absolutely, because one, and it's track number 6 on this album, which has become one of my most important roles, because for one, when it was suggested to me by the mentors in La Scala, I thought it was impossible, because when I hear the sounds of Lucia singing at the moment, I don't hear my kind of sound. And so it took about 5 years to convince myself. But I knew for sure that when I sang it the first time, the first phrases, the voice says yes. Because I can tell from the first time I look at the score if I should move forward or not. I can hear it in the voice, and I can hear it in myself too. And so I need to be aware of that. And so when I had the chance to work with Richard Bonning, I learned even more, because I was so nervous, because, I mean, it's Richard Bonning and one of the best Lucias,
Joan
Sutherland's
husband.
So I thought he would say, forget it. But the first thing he said, if you continue to sing the way you do and have that discipline, you're going to sing not only one Lucia, there have been plenty more. But in the process, then he taught me things. And things that went well that I thought were not going well, you know, to have the balance of great mentors like that, it has been wonderful to experience.
I remember, yes, it's interesting you say all that, because I just thought, gosh, imagine being pretty, singing with Richard Bonning, who had the wife who was so much the sort of textbook.
Yes.
Joan Sutherland, Lucia. And apparently he also knows about breathing. Apparently she was an expert with breathing. And all these things are so important. And I've presumed the various people you've met and taught you, help you with all that as well.
That's the basic. It's like me and you. What keeps us alive?
It's breathing.
We breathe.
Yes.
And so, and a big part of making that same communication through the voice and the music requirements is to master the breathing. And Lucia taught me so much about my voice. If anything, I said to myself, if I don't get to sing this role forever, it has taught me the basics of knowing how to work on a role and how to solve technical things and to grow in the midst. And I'm so excited that I got it on the CD. I've sung it, obviously, here in Cape Town and at the Deutsche Oper Berlin. And the next season, I'm starting with it at the Bastille Opera House for the first time to have a full run of the whole opera. But how many years has it been? About 6 or 7 years when I started this journey. And I'm excited that it's growing. And soon it will be at the Metropolitan Opera. It's there already at the Metropolitan Opera House.
My goodness. So let's talk about your voice briefly. Well, I shouldn't say briefly, but I think that you're slightly heavier. You're not really a spinto, are you? You're a slightly heavier soprano, but you're not a dramatic soprano, well, yet anyway. Is that right?
Well, I try to not put myself in a certain category because I feel like it limits me. I just choose to say I am a soprano who loves to sing long legato lines and loves to run the voice, and she's working very hard on the high notes and everything else. But the basic answer would be I'm a lyric soprano, but I have this flexibility that allows me to work with the bel canto repertoire. And I've worked so hard in the vocal range to make the range fluid as possible. And of course, I've had the pleasure of having mentors like Virginia Davids and Mirella Freni and La Scala, and obviously Mariela De Villa, who's like an expert to this coloratura and this type of roles. And so I have had that sense of being in the middle, not too high and not too low. Heavy, I don't know, but the voice is warm. There's a certain color in it that is warmer than usual sopranos who sing this repertoire. And of course, I've been working hard on the extension of the voice in terms of the coloraturas and the sovre acuti.
Let's talk about those three important ladies in your life in just a moment, Mirella Freni, Virginia Davids, and others. Mm-hmm. But what's the next track we're going to listen to from your brand new CD, Pretty?
Well, the next track that we're going to listen to is Le Comte Henri, which was
the big moment
at the Metropolitan Opera House.
Okay, we'll talk about it afterwards. That was with Juan Diego Flores,
yes.
Okay.
Je t'ai béni et tout.
Well, there's Rossini again, whom I guess Pretty Yende said was her lucky charm.
Le Contori.
Le Contori.
Yes.
Now, do tell us, Pretty Yende, on People of Note on Fine Music Radio this week, about this extraordinary debut you made. We heard all about it here in South Africa, by the way, with photographs and all the rest that you were called in at the last minute.
Yes.
In this opera, you were opposite the star lyric tenor, Juan
Diego Flores. Mm-hmm.
So how did it happen, and how did you feel, and did you not want to run away screaming?
Well, I have to say that one of the things that made this moment happen was that the background I had from the South African College of Music. I have had the most amazing support as a young artist and as a student here, performing on stage, being prepared vocally, being prepared on stage with Angelo Gobato, but also the opportunities I've had to sing with the Cape Philharmonic Orchestra. So in a way, I had so much wealth before I went overseas. And so when this call came, we always joked about it with Virginia Davids, that one day the Met's going to call and you're going to have to answer that call. Well, it happened, and I had just finished my season in La Scala. It was December, so I was home, and I had switched off everything. I was not on the internet. I was not answering my emails.
You were home in South Africa.
Home in South Africa in Piet Retief. And my manager had been trying to get hold of me. Finally, I opened my phone and I opened my email and I get this call. And then we talk about it, and he tells me, "Are you sitting down?" I said, "Yeah, what's going on?" He said, "Well, I think Father Christmas or baby Jesus feels that you have been a good girl this year, so he has brought you a special present." I said, "What do you mean?" "The Metropolitan Opera House are looking for an Adele, and how would you feel about making your debut at the Metropolitan Opera House in a year?"
And there you were, sitting in Piet Retief in summer in South Africa.
I was in my mom's bedroom. I was like, "What? No, wait. What?" And then he says, "Yes." I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yes, we're sure." And I said to him, because we had already had a contract to sing at the Met now in 2017. That was 2013.
Yes.
And so I said to him, "Well, wait a minute. I don't know the opera very well. I know the aria because I had been looking at the aria when I was in the academy. I just loved Rossini and I just loved the aria. So I just worked at it a little bit." And so when I had listened to the whole opera on the internet, I said, "Yes." Because I knew that I had more to win than to lose. I know that my voice loves to sing in French, and I'm happy that now soon I'll be speaking in French. I knew that it would be a dream come true to work at the Metropolitan Opera House.
Yes.
And I had been working so hard in the Bel Canto repertoire that I knew that there was so much more to win than to lose. And it's a piece that's not oftenly done. But for the Met to trust a young artist who had never even seen the score was powerful.
How
that
did
was
they
a
know
change.
About you?
They knew about me through my agents,
okay.
Of course.
And they'd
but
heard
then
you.
They had heard me because I had done the audition initially to, you know, to come and sing there. And they had offered me a role, and I said no to the role because I felt it was not the right role. So the Contori, when came, was a second suggestion from both the management and them. And so I said yes to the call, and basically it was hard for me to get the music because I was in Piet Retief and everybody was on holiday. And we both know that Rossini has so many editions, so you have to get the right one. And the variations have to be right from the start. So if you don't have enough time, a month or two or 6 months or a year to look at the role, and you only have a month, you gotta make sure that you get the right score. But it was so difficult. And so the actual score that was on my hand was 7 days before the opening night. I remember entering the big orchestra room where on the day it was the Sitzprobe, and I met Maestro Benini, and he said to me, "Don't worry, I won't make you sing today. I'll just make the other cover sing so that you can have an idea." And I remember coming in, and everybody, well, Juan Diego came in, he said, "Hi, Pretty," because we had known each other from La Scala. He sang there a lot when I was still a student. And he came and said, "Hi, Pretty, welcome, blah, blah, blah." And that was great. But other people were like, "So who are you?" And I said, "I'm the Countess." "So which role are you doing?" I was like, "I'm the Countess." "Oh, you." "Yes." And I was the only one in the room who did not know the role, which was really amazing. But I was sure that I am gifted to learn quickly. I can memorize quickly. And the whole piece is so musical that in my ear, I listen to it once or I sing it once. The second time it gets better. And that has been the gift, more than just the talent, to be able to...
And the words. The libretto itself.
Yes, absolutely. And so it was one moment that was really, really defining everything, because everything happens so quick. And of course, it explains the fall, because
yes, famously
the famous fall,
for the famous fall,
even before singing one note. And I feel that that was a defining moment for me to understand where I was, because psychologically I felt like a replacement. I felt I did not have time. I felt I did not belong. And this is just my thoughts lying to me, because I was the girl who was called. And so I had to wake up from that. And the only way to wake up, I guess, was to be on the floor, to remember to be grounded.
What happened?
What happened was I came in on stage and I was so nervous.
And this is your Met debut.
And this is my Met debut. And I could literally feel everybody's heartbeats. It was so silent because we were doing the Phantom Mime, and I would have to say goodbye to my brother and then walk off stage gracefully as the Countess. But then I missed a step. I missed a step, and then I was on the floor. And I remember it took some seconds. I said, "What are you doing on the floor?" Oh my goodness, I fell.
It's in slow motion.
Right, for me it was like a slow motion. And then when everybody, of course, they had to know if I can still go on. I was bruised and I thought I would feel embarrassed, but actually I laughed at myself, because I was like, "What are you doing on the floor? They're not, you know, they didn't call you to be on the floor." But for me it was a defining moment to say, I'm entering a bigger arena. It is a huge responsibility. People pay, they prepare well in advance. And I should always remember to have that centeredness. And for me, Virginia used to say, you have to be like you have your roots planted like a tree, so that you cannot be just tossed around. But also emotionally, because we're dealing with emotions, I have to be so centered. And so that was one thing that I believe it was part of the fall. And also to wake up, because I was not there psychologically. And it's important to have that centeredness.
So that moment of the fall, and they helped you up, and the opera continued.
The opera continued.
And were you absolutely okay?
I was absolutely
okay. Your voice was there.
The voice was there, but the mind was not there before. But then after the fall, everything was in alignment.
Imagine that.
Because we did the Phantom Mime, of course, and then I have like 20 minutes before I have to come back on. So I didn't have to go on and sing immediately. So I went on, fell, got off, and woke up, had time to come down, and I had stitches here and there.
But oh, stitches as well.
Yeah, I really had
a
bad
fall.
It was a bad fall. But people who saw it, because I don't know, I wish I can see how it happened, because apparently they thought it was part of the acting, because the dress did something so gracefully, and, you know, but it became one of the most important moments.
Isn't that interesting that something like that you've turned around into a seminal moment
you
in your
see,
life?
You see, this is what this whole journey is about. I thought it was just me being curious about the music and wanting to share it, but it's turning out to tell me that human beings are powerful. They can be courageous. They are creative beings. They never give up. Their soul says, "I can. Let's try one more time." So the opinions in the world, if this inner being is so powerful and centered and continuing on that treasure, nothing can happen. If all those thoughts of embarrassment and shame overpowered me, I was not going to have that moment. Mm-hmm. We would not be here together.
No.
And so in the process, I'm learning that I can be courageous, and I can fall in front of 4,000 people and still stand up and give my gift. And that gift returned back, because in the middle of the aria, the ovation was so much that Preeti then said, "Oh no, they actually welcome me here." And that was great. So the two, you know, met.
What an amazing story, Priti. Your debut at the Met. Now, look, one more. Let's have another piece of music while
okay.
we get a chance from your new album.
From my new album, I guess the future we can look forward to, because my season now back at the Metropolitan Opera House will be Il Barbiere di Siviglia, but then my debut as Romeo in Romeo and Juliet as Juliet. And it is one piece, which is track number 5. And I'm excited because now every time I will be going to the Metropolitan Opera House, each season I'll be singing 2 productions. And this happens to Jonas Kaufmann. This happens to Anna Netrebko. So to be honored by the Met, to be trusted to 2021 season, that's really amazing. So I'm excited about this. It's in French. It's a lovely story. And I'm very grateful that I sang the second aria because I believe it shows more of the possibilities of my voice than the first aria, which is mostly performed.
Yeah.
music from the opera Romeo and Juliet by Charles Gounod. That was Juliet's aria. The second aria is Pretiende. So that was Pretiende, who's my guest on People of Note this week, with this fascinating success story of a trajectory of your career, Pretty. And that comes from her new CD, A Journey, Pretiende, which has just been released now on the Sony Classical label. And as you've heard, it's well worth investigating the CD, and also to have this incredible souvenir of your voice that's been so beautifully recorded and so beautifully captured by Sony. But Pretty, tell me a little bit. You've spoken a few times, just briefly, you've spoken very highly of Virginia Davids.
Yes.
And obviously she's had a huge impact on your life.
She is one of the best gifts that I could have asked for when I started this journey, because she had already had a career internationally and she was really highly acclaimed, and she had not only the generosity as a mother but also the generosity as an artist, because she knew the industry. And so when we started working together, it was just a match made in heaven, maybe. And one of the things that she continued to try to make me understand was that it does not take one night. It takes time to develop the voice, and you have to be kind to yourself, and you have to be patient to yourself. And one of the things that were difficult for me, because I came to the South African College of Music and the talent was insane. I felt not worthy. I did not feel I was talented enough. But then she tried to teach me that to appreciate my gift too, that if I were to protect it, cultivate it, grow it, it would be just as shining. And so I owe to her a lot of thanks, but not only to her, to the whole staff at the South African College of Music. Angelo Gobato, who said to me, you can decide what kind of an artist to be. You can be one that makes beautiful sounds and everybody rests with the beautiful sounds, or there's a wealth of music beyond that, where you sing a song or you sing a sound and there's immediate communication. And that's what the kind of an artist I wanted to be, the kind of artist like Maria Callas, Mirella Fleming, that golden age of artists who made just a sound and it went through your heart. I wanted to be that kind of an artist.
Are these artists that you admire? I was going to ask you just to name one.
Absolutely.
I mean, Mirella Fleming has had a career with an extraordinary voice.
Absolutely.
And she clearly looked after her voice to have had such
exactly.
a long career.
For me, it has been hard to say I like only one person, because beauty resides in all of us. For example, the way Maria Callas tells a story in a sound, in a phrase, like no other, but the beauty of the hypnotizing, beautiful sound of Montserrat Caballé is to be found anywhere. And the fire in John Sullen's singing is something that's extraordinary. And obviously the nature and the charisma of Pavarotti as well as Mirella Freni on stage was something that was so magnificent.
Yeah.
And I've always been inspired by those artists.
And so Pretty, time is almost up, which is so irritating. We could go on forever being indulgent, I am here. But you said next year you're going back to the Met. It sounds as though you almost, shall I say, part of the Met at the moment. But you've been to La Scala, you've
yes.
been to Covent Garden, all these houses, Russia, elsewhere.
Well, Covent Garden is coming.
Oh, is Covent Garden coming?
Covent Garden is coming. It's coming. I've had La Scala as my artistic home, and now the Metropolitan Opera House is becoming a home.
A home.
Yes.
Okay, and then what are you doing at Covent Garden, or is that still a secret?
Covent Garden, I'm doing Elysée d'Amore with Rolando Villazon.
Oh,
and that was one opera house that was left from my bucket list. And so it was a checkmate when we got the news.
Pretty, you know what, it's extraordinary listening to you, and people I think who are listening to you who might be wanting to do a career in anything musical, I think have learned a lot about appreciating the gift, the talent that you have, and nurturing it and loving
yes.
it, not pushing it,
no.
not listening to other people, but just letting it develop.
Yes.
But also it's a God-given talent that
yes.
you are sharing,
mm-hmm.
and your humility and philosophical side has come over warmly and fantastically. So I know you've been so busy, and thanks for spending all this time with us on Fine Music Radio, and I know we're going to have you here again to talk to you as you come off those great stages of Europe.
Thank you very much. It has been a great journey for me, and one of the things that I enjoy the most now is the hard work that has been part of me. This was Virginia's advice as well, that hard work has to be so your friend that it doesn't feel like hard work, because a lot goes into it, and it's a joy for me to share it with everyone.
Pretty, what shall we end with from your brand new CD, A Journey, Pretiende?
We can end with I Puritani by Bellini, or Rendetemi la Speme, it's a Met scene, by Elvira.
Priti Ende has been my guest on People of Note this week. Priti Ende, I think everyone will join me in saying you're a star. We're immensely proud of you. Long may you reign.
Thank you very much. This little light of mine, I shall shine all over the world.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
On stage at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay, a brand new, fresh and exciting production of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice's wonderful musical, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Starring Earl Gregory as Joseph, Bianca LaGrange as the narrator, and Jonathan Rocksmith as the rock and rolling Pharaoh. Now on stage at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. Book now.